Jeff, and I'm delighted to be joined tonight with my dear friend, fellow poet and writer Melissa Studdard, who will be assisting me with the show chat room. You've heard the intro to Ivy Robertson's seminal song, Somewhere Down the Crazy River, which is where a writer sometimes finds themselves as we navigate the circuitous river of creating stories. I'll be traversing that river this evening with essayist, writer, poet, author, interviewer, my friend, and editor-in-chief of Author Magazine, Bill Knauer. Welcome, Bill. So happy to have you with me tonight.
Thank you, Jeffrey. It is so lovely to be here.
And Melissa, thank you so much for helping me with the chat room tonight and joining in. We are all mutual friends, so I have a feeling we're going to have a great time, as always. And Bill, I want to say right off the bat, congratulations on the successful launch party last night for your just-released book, Write Within Yourself, An Author's Companion. It appears that it far exceeded your expectations, so please share with me, Melissa, how that was.
Oh, it was great. It was just great. We did it here in Seattle. Seattle's a great town for readers and writers. There's all, well, first of all, the place is just lousy with writers of all experience levels, and there's lots of really nice independent bookstores. There's Elliott Bay Books, and there's Third Place Books, and East West Books, and Queen Anne Books, and on and on. And so we did it at Third Place Books in Lake Forest Park, which is a beautiful place to do a launch, and we had standing room only. We had sold out of books. It was a great crowd. It was a friendly crowd. I love talking to people about writing. I like telling them stories, and it was just great. You know, I really love this project. It was a long time coming, but it found its way into print, and I was just delighted that it was. It's the book that I would have wanted to have read when I was a young man in need of a companion, an author's companion. And so, you know, the best advice you can give, I think, anyone is to write the book you'd want to read, and that's what I did. And now I'll go to other bookstores and conferences and wherever they'll have me, because I love to talk to writers about writing and creating sort of the life they live and the life they want to live and the books they want to write.
Excellent. And it is what it is a for our listeners, it's a compilation of your wonderfully written essays. Bill, I'll tell you, you can say so much in so few words, and to me, that is the apotheosis, the upper point you reach in writing, to be able to, you know, the old thing about less is more. I'm such a fan of that. I see it so effectively done as you do. I'm so impressed, and it is a wonderful book.
You know, it's a funny thing, Jeff. I was thinking about this recently. My wife, she doesn't read many of my essays just because she lives with me, so she doesn't need to hear more from Bill, you know. But every once in a while, she'll read one.
Peter.
And she read one the other day, and she was not really aware of the way I do it. She thought I laid out more advice for people, which I do sometimes, but often not. And I said to her, I said, you know, I always looked upon these essays as poems. That's how I thought of them in my mind as I approached them, and which always puzzled me because clearly they're not poems, they're stories and essays. But that's how I thought of them, and I always, when I imagined this book, I imagined it like a poetry collection. Now, when you pick up a book, a collection of poems, you can just flip to any page, read a poem or two, and be taken where the poet wanted to take you, and that's how I always wanted to treat the book. But I thought of this because you mentioned brevity and getting to the point quickly and doing as much with as little as possible. I think that the reason I thought of them as poems is this. Every poem, in a way, asks a question, I think. Every poem attempts to answer it. Now, it's not unlike, say, a sermon or a lecture or a class where you attempt to answer questions. But in that format, you have a lot of time. And that's fine. I love being taught, and I love being given full answers. And so the question might be, you know, is writing worth it, or is it just too difficult and one shouldn't bother taking it on, for instance? Well, the answer is yes. You could give it a very long answer, and that's lovely. Or if you only have 400 words, which is what I would give the limit I sort of gave myself, What you do instead is you take the poet's approach. And what the poet does is say, I'm not going to give you the answer. Instead, using language and metaphor and maybe a little bit of narrative, I am going to excite in you, the reader, hopefully, the feeling that contains the yes I would otherwise explain. And so the poet doesn't have time, but what they can do is bring you to a place of feeling with which you then provide your own answer. And I think that that's mostly what I'm trying to do. I realize I didn't have time to give these big, long explanations about why writing is worth it and life is worth it and why you shouldn't despair. So instead, I use a poetic approach that I hope gives you the feeling of why life is worth it and why writing is worth it and poetry is worth it and stories are worth it, that you then finish the answer for yourself. Does that make sense?
It does. That's excellent, Bill. And I mean, to quote you, and I really like this quote of yours, this is your own personal quote, what do I most want to say? I'm gathering you sit down with that question in mind first and foremost and work from that point. And that's a great point to start from.
Yeah, it is. And because you know what's so good about that question, you know the answer. It's right within you. You don't have to go, oh, you see, right within yourself. But it is. It's right there inside of you. It's the closest thing to you. And there's so much in the publishing world, Jeff, that is outside of us. Really, all of it looks like it's outside of us. Your readers are outside of you.
Right.
Publishers are outside of you. Your agents and editors are. I mean, all the world of sort of worldly success exists physically outside of you. Yet all of that success that you will or will not have begins within you. And as a writer, you've got to keep your attention where it belongs, which is within you, which is where your stories begin and where they percolate and where you must turn to be able to tell them. And it's very easy to forget that. So when I ask myself, what do you most want to say, that directs my attention where it needs to go. Instead of, well, what would be successful? Now my attention is outside of me. And
right.
all my stories and all my feelings and all my thoughts are within me. And so despite the fact that readers are outside of me and publishers are outside of me, my stories are inside of me, and I have to go in there and I have to stay there if I'm ever going to tell the kind of story that can travel and go out to other people and be of use to them and maybe make me a little money. What the hell?
Yeah, exactly. And, Bill, I'll tell you the other thing that I really like. We've talked about this, you and I, on other occasions at length, is about being in the moment, that process.
Yeah.
Please elaborate on that because it's fascinating.
The process of being in the moment while you write?
While you're writing, exactly.
Yeah, you know, it's critical. And I think it's the gift that really doing anything you love gives you, but for sure with writing, because you can't write unless you're in the moment. You know, you can't do it. You cannot write if you're thinking about the past. You can't write if you're worried about the future, because now your attention has left the thing you're trying to communicate. The only way to write effectively is to bring your attention into this very moment where the story exists. Because, you know, I have found that when I write these little essays, I have found that it's best for me not to come to the page with a preconceived notion of where I will go with the essay. I might have, you know, the idea might have come to me while I was pacing around or exercising or whatever, and I might have gotten a basic kind of sketch for it. But I've learned to remind myself, let the thing fill out on its own at the page. Discover where you actually want to go. And the only way to do that is to enter the moment and ask your imagination what is the truest answer to the question that I'm asking. And it reminds me of interviewing, actually. You know, I do these interviews, too, with Author to Author, which is my Blog Talk Radio show, and then, of course, the videos that I do for Author.
Yep.
And those I don't prepare for either. You know, in the sort of traditional way, I don't prepare a list of questions. I sort of check out the writer, and I read their book. But I have to go meet them and learn who they are and learn what is present between us in that moment. And that will be the interesting thing, and that will be what the moment wants from us. And if I try to work against that, I work against all the energy and potential that is present. And the same thing with writing. If I sit down with one idea of what an essay or a story or a book should be in my intellectual mind, I am fighting against the natural, authentically creative energy that is otherwise available to me if I can shut my mind off, my thinking mind, mm-hmm. and allow it in, you know, which is really what I try to do every day. And it's a great gift because I really don't know if I ever feel so alive as when I've gone in really deeply to a piece of writing and really enter that place of just letting, of listening deeply and with great humility, I might add. That is as alive sometimes as I really can feel.
Something Ray Bradbury said to me really, really resonated. And you would think at firsthand it would be ego-based, but I know with him it was not. And certainly not the case for me. Times that you, like you said, when you're done and you look up, and he used to look down at his typewriter and say, I can't believe I just did that. I cannot believe I just created that. You know, and this, you know, throughout his entire life. And we're talking about one of the finest writers in history, in my opinion. I adore Ray Bradbury and his work and the man. Yeah. And the moment is essential to the life. I find for me, especially with poetry, it seems to come in me at the oddest times, you know, and if I think of it and write it in my head, if I don't get to the place where I write, you know, sit down on my computer, it's gone. It disappears.
Oh, really?
And like Ray as well, with dreams, when I wake up with a good storyline and from a dream, and I get a lot of those, and most of my, I think my best work comes from my dreams, as it did for Ray. If I don't get right on, you know, and get to it and get at least the outline, it goes away.
It goes. Mine stick around, boy.
That's why when you said in the moment, you know, really, really resonated so deeply in me, and I got it. And you know, I'm like, yeah, that's what it is. That's what I'm attempting to be, is to stay in the moment.
Yeah, it is, but it requires surrender. It really requires surrender because your ego hates the moment. Your ego wants nothing to do with the moment.
I think it just wants to do other things.
Oh.
Do something else.
Yeah, it wants to rest on its laurels, or it wants to hold a grudge about things that have happened, or mm-hmm. it's arranging the future to ensure its safety, you know. Mm-hmm. And it can't stand the moment, and you have to surrender the idea that you are in charge of creation. You know, you've got to surrender that. It reminds me of love, actually, of having a love relationship. It occurred to me, I remember first when I was in the first couple years of my relationship with my wife, when I moved up here, and I knew that this was the relationship that I'd be in, you know, hopefully for the rest of my life.
Mm-hmm.
It was very clear to me. But the word that came first to my head with her was surrender, because we understood that one of our rules was no one's allowed to be right in an argument. There is no right. No one wins. There is no winning an argument. You surrender the concept of winning an argument and instead simply seek the truth of why you were separated in this concept of a fight, you know, or of a disagreement. And that sense of surrender to me is present in writing also, because I have to surrender the idea that I'm in charge of this, that I can, you know, the metaphor I use is if I'm a gardener, I can't make a flower. I can create an environment that permits a flower to grow, but I can't make it.
That's a great metaphor.
And that's how writing feels to me. I've realized I have no idea what a story is. I don't know. I don't know how to make a story, but I do know how to invite one in. I do know how to create an environment within me that permits it to come, because what do we say, Jeffrey, when we get an idea? It came to me. It popped into my head. Right? You don't think, I made it. Right?
Yeah.
No. And so you surrender the idea that you can do this yourself. Whatever yourself is, your small self, and you surrender that, and you invite in that which can provide stories or poems or essays, And then you do your job. You do your job, which is to translate it. To translate it so that this thing, that where is this story when it arrives? Where does it exist? Inside you, right? That's where the whole story is, when you get it. And no one else can hear it until you do your part, which is to translate it. That's your job, to take this piece, this beautiful thing that was given to you generously, and said, do with it what you want, and you translate it so another human being can see what you see. That's our job. But if I take credit for it, Jeff, if I take credit for it, I'm saying I don't need anyone else. And in that instant, I cut myself off from it. I cut myself off from the source of the very thing I want to share.
Creative aspect aside, exactly. There's no longer creativity. There's just ego-driven. I so agree.
Yeah. Yeah, and you can. The thing is, if you're a skilled enough writer, you know, and I've put in my 10,000 hours, so I've got the skill, you can fake it, right? You can imitate what the writing is like. You can imitate the authentic stuff by just sounding like a writer.
Right, and what makes me feel the most authentic, Bill, when I'm done with the piece, whatever, I'm writing, again, a poem, an essay, even copy, you know, just standard copy, or, you know, when I'm working with Tefera Journal, is just when I feel like I've simply dictated it. It's already there, already have it. That's my authentic.
Yeah. You know, I think that is the, Jeff, I was thinking about this. So when I write these pieces for my book, for Write Within Yourself, and when they first appear on Author, I realize, and I don't want to sound grandiose, but what I'm trying to do is tell the truth. I mean, that's what I really want. I look at an aspect of my life or creativity, and I say to myself, what is the deepest truth of this, right? And that's what I aim for. And the thing about the truth is that if it's the truth, it existed already, and you have just perceived it. And so in that way, you're not making it, you're simply seeing it. Does that make sense? So in other words, you know, when you solve a math problem, the answer already existed. You just finally perceived it. And I feel the same way about the things I'm trying to write. The truth was already there. I just had to teach myself within my mind's eye to perceive it. And it was simply that. And I felt the same way when I met my wife. You know, I perceived that I loved her and acted from it. The love exists. That love was something that was a truth that I simply observed and said, well, that's true, so I better act on it.
Mm-hmm. And I just want to give your wife, Jennifer Paris, a nod as well. She is, speak about a writer. She's actually featured some of her essays on Author Magazine.
Yes,
she is an astounding writer, Bill. Talk about, again, authentic, getting right to the core. You walk away from that moved and changed, affected, which we all hope to accomplish in anything we do. And never mind, including... additional to that is what an amazing artist she is, graphic artist, and her covers. What I'm trying to say, my friend, you are a very lucky man.
She's a great writer, and I love the visual work she's been doing. It's just getting better and better and better and more and richer. The stuff she's been doing for Author has been just gorgeous. And so for those of you who are listening, it's Author Magazine is the website, authormagazine.org. And Jennifer Paris, my wife, but she writes a column every month for it, and it always includes an illustration because she's an illustrator as well as a writer. And, they're just great. I'm just pleased as punch that she, agreed to do it and has agreed to continue to do it since we started the magazine. It's just been great.
She's a true Renaissance lady, my friend.
She is.
Oftentimes, Bill, sort of get back to the interview aspect. I was an editor-in-chief for a small press, as you know, a couple of years ago, and was often asked, what do you do? What's an editor-in-chief do? And you're at the editor for the prestigious, and I may say again, authormagazine.org. It's an amazing, amazing website, amazing magazine.
Thanks.
Your blog's there. Your daily blogs are posted there. You now have guest bloggers coming in. Well done again. I'm so looking forward to their work. So what's a day for Bill Knauer like at Author Magazine?
Well, you know, one of my goals when I created Author was to not to – I wanted to create a magazine that wouldn't consume my entire day. You know, I really want to make it a manageable experience for myself. And so what I do, right, it depends. If I'm working on a book, which at this moment I'm not, I finished a memoir about a couple months ago, so we're waiting to see what's going to happen with that. And so I didn't give myself a break from book writing. But if I'm not writing a book, I get up and I write my essay first. That's the first thing I do, because I do that 5 days a week. And then I go about the business of Author Magazine. So there's a lot of booking writers for interviews, you know, seeing who's coming through, booking them for my show Author to Author. Looking at submissions for articles, although I have a lot of regular columnists, which does make my job a lot easier.
Okay.
And of course, reading the submissions and deciding which ones I want to go with, and then going through and probably doing some editorial work on them, and not copy editing. I have other people do that, but just maybe it's for structural. But then a big part of my time, I do interviews with people, so I go to wherever the authors are, maybe at bookstores or maybe their home or hotel. We shoot the interviews, and then I have to edit them. And so I get the footage, and I watch it, and I log it. I write down what we said because I can't remember. And then I edit them down, because we usually shoot 20 to 25 minutes of material, and I usually want to cut it down to about 8 to 10 minutes. And, you know, that I want those things to be as good as they can be. And so that takes a little time. I also homeschool my son, so I have that during the day as well. And so I sort of divide my day up between editing and a lot of emailing and scheduling and reading, too. I have to read people's books. So it's kind of a full day, to tell you the truth.
It really is. Please build to the next question, which is, you know, and what I was often asked, because I think it was a way of them sort of subtly soliciting me to publish their work, was, Mr. Kanawha, what do you most like to read? What do you enjoy reading?
Well, you know, it's a tricky question for me, Jeff, because I hardly have time to read what I want to read,
mm-hmm.
because I'm interviewing so many writers and I'm a slow
reader.
Well,
that's why I asked, Bill, what do you really like to read?
You know, I do like memoir these days. I've been starting to get very turned on. I came from very much a literary fiction background and poetry background. That was really where I came from, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I have lately been very interested in memoir. Perhaps because I wrote it, I don't know. But there is something, because the memoirist must use their life for transformation. They really don't get to leave you in a narrative hole, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where sometimes the fiction writer can make that choice. Not always, but sometimes, especially the sort of postmodern, you know, stance that some writers can take. But the memoirist has to say, what has this taught me? And I'm very interested in that, in how have you learned, you know, to let go of your worst stories about yourself and your life? How have you learned to see the truth behind what's happened to you? And how do you reduce your life down into a narrative that's of use to someone else? And so that recently has been, I've been reading a lot of also a book called The Course in Miracles, A Course in Miracles, which I'm a big fan of, and that's been great. So sometimes spiritual tracks like Eckhart Tolle and A Course in Miracles, and sometimes like Deepak Chopra. I do like that stuff very much, although it's more teachery in a way, but that's okay. I find it's good to sort of ground my perspective. And so, you know, what I'm looking for a lot of times from writers when they're submitting to the magazine, if they can do it, I guess is in a way sort of what I do, which is to say, how has writing taught you about life and vice versa? You know, although we do stuff on craft, because everybody always wants to know about craft, I am less interested in that than in how writing has taught you to lead a creative, meaningful life. You know, because to me, I can't think about writing and not think about life, and I can't think about life and not think about writing.
You're so interesting.
And so that's why I'm always interested. How is it blended? How is writing blended into the rest of your life and vice versa?
That's an excellent point, because they are so interconnected. It's I truly believe, and I know I've said this on many shows with many friends and many interviews, that I believe that there's not even a genetic predisposition for us to write, create. We just are that. It is our being. It is connected to our soul. I really feel like it's our soul speaking for us. I truly do.
Absolutely. And by the way, the thing about human beings is all we know how to do is create. We can't do anything else. You know, people say, oh, I'm not creative. It's bunk. You have a conversation. You've just created. Guess what?
Something
you know,
exactly.
You cook dinner.
Wasn't there.
You've just created. You know what the difference between artists and or say artists and entrepreneurs, for instance. So I don't mean to say that these are the only subgroup, but the difference with these people, for the most part, is that and everyone else who calls themselves uncreative, is that these people have simply recognized it and are doing it deliberately. You know, when you face that blank page, you suddenly go, "Oh, I get it. Creation is my choice." And the choices I make, the words I choose, that determines my story. Suddenly see life as a deliberate act as opposed to an accidental one or one where your choices mean nothing. When you're a writer, your choices mean everything. There's nothing but you with the blank page and your words. And so it teaches you, writing for sure has taught me to create deliberately, not just at the page, but in my whole life, that every conversation, let it be deliberate. Let you speak deliberately. What do you want to make of this moment with this person right now, you and me? What do you want to make? Do you want to create accidentally out of fear to run away from thoughts of inadequacy, or do you want to create deliberately the thing you want to see, just like you create deliberately the stories you're writing?
It is so.
That's what I'm always interested in.
It is, Bill. That's so well said. It's so transferable to your life, to your relationships,
yes.
To all your experiences. Because
it's all the same process.
Because it's every new event. Is a new experience if, once again, you're in that moment, whether it's
right.
With yourself in front of a blank page or whether it's with another in a conversation or, in your case especially, in a wonderful, nurturing relationship. You get the most out of it is what I'm trying to say. You really get the most out of your life in every event.
That's right. Because, you know, so my little motto, Jeff, is what it takes to write the book you want to write, is what it takes to lead the life you want to lead. This is, I'm going to go to my grave saying this. But the thing is that creative energy that informs your work, that creative force that gives you your ideas, that pops those ideas into your head, do you think that turns off just because you're not writing anymore? Do you think it doesn't speak to you when you're trying to decide what house to move into, what restaurant to go to? It doesn't shut off. It is always trying to feed you a useful plan for you to follow. And the mistake we make sometimes as creative people is to think that the skill we have developed in listening to that creative voice is not applicable elsewhere. It's applicable anywhere. If you know how to write a book, you know how to start a business and have a marriage and do anything, and vice versa, because it's all the same process. It's just different mechanics. But that
and I really
creative
like
voice
Bill,
is always
do
there.
Do without fear. Be fearless. Exactly. That's
well,
the
yeah.
Yin and yang of it both. Action without fear.
Fearless. Not against fear, but without fear.
Yep.
Without the fearful thought. Because all fear is just a thought, Jeff. It's just a thought. It's
like
not a reality.
Yes, exactly, Bill. Bill, would you do us the honor, and me especially, to read one of your essays? This one really, as far as, again, going back to, you know, process and craft, it's important. It's a question you and I are often asked, but you've said it so well in your essay, Four Reasons. Can I take it upon myself to ask your good gracious to read that?
I would love to, Jeff. This is a little essay called Four Reasons. It's really become which was the foundation, the beginning of a lecture I give called Debunking the Myth That Writing is Hard.
Mm-hmm.
So this is where it started with this essay called Four Reasons. This goes this way. I don't think writing is intrinsically hard. I understand that people find it hard all the time, as have I. But there are always reasons for this, and by my count, usually one of four. One, you don't actually want to write. Maybe the idea of being a writer appeals to you intellectually, but the writing itself brings you little actual pleasure. There is no crime in this. There are lots of things in the world to do, and writing is by no means the noblest. Find what you truly, truly love most and do it all you can. Two, you are writing the wrong thing. you think you should write something commercial, but you want to write something literary. Or you think you should write something literary, but you would rather write a thriller. Or you are trying to write what you think will please an agent or an editor or your writing group or your mother. You are the only one you need to please. And anything can sell, and people don't actually know what they like until they see it. In short, everything is on the table. So pick what makes you happiest and what comes the easiest. 3, you are impatient. No matter how disciplined you are, there is no forcing the river. Whether you write 2 drafts or 10, you have no choice but to allow the work to come at the rate it wants to come. Patience is required not just to see long projects like novels all the way through, but sentence by sentence. Sometimes waiting another 30 seconds for the full idea to bloom can make all the difference. And oddly, I have found that the more patient I am, the more I am willing to wait, the quicker the work comes. And then 4, you are holding 2 contradictory ideas. For instance, I want to make a nice living, but nobody reads my kinds of books. Or I love to write, but the publishing industry is capricious and uncaring. I love to write, but I am just not talented enough to be published. One idea is going one way. The other idea is going in the exact opposite direction. You, in the meantime, remain stuck between these competing ideas, convinced they can both be true. Choose what you want to believe and believe only in it. Evidence be damned. Evidence, in my experience, changes precisely to align with whatever I believe the most. And that is the truth. That is the truth. I would add to that.
Excellent. That should be mandatory in every syllabus, for every creating writing course. And I agree.
Let's make it happen, Jeff.
I wanted to add something
to that, if I could. We talked about being in the moment earlier. We've been talking about it, this conversation, and that's the final reason that people, that even experienced writers, who love to write, who are writing the thing they most want to write, and who don't hold to competing ideas, who really believe in their work, the reason they still call it hard sometimes is because you can't write without giving writing your full attention. And so a lot of us don't spend our time giving life our full attention. We do divide it between the past and the future. But the reason I think that this is important to debunk, this myth, Jeff, that writing is hard, mm-hmm. is that if you believe in that myth, then when you have an experience of writing and you experience it as hard, you won't question it. So if you're writing the wrong kind of book, instead of saying, am I writing the book I want to write? Instead, you just say, well, writing's hard. Everybody says so. And you keep writing the book you don't want to write. Or if you're sitting there trying to write a book you love, but are thinking, geez, I don't think someone like me who has no talent can write this book, you won't question that thought. Instead, you'll just experience writing it as hard. Because how easy is it going to be to write a book if you're thinking, I suck and I can't write, you can't do it. So you won't question the thought. You won't look, why is this so hard? You won't question your thoughts, and you'll just forge ahead white-knuckling. No, if you can disbelieve this myth and you experience writing as hard, now you can step back and say, why am I experiencing it as hard? What's going on? And actually look at what you're thinking, look at what you're writing, and make an adjustment. But only if you don't believe in that myth. So that's why I wrote it, and that's why I preach it wherever I can go. Don't believe it. Don't drink the Kool-Aid of the writing is hard.
Exactly. And I feel the same way in the way that I phrase it when people ask. I say you cannot create in dissonance. It will never happen.
Good. I like it. Yes. Yes.
And where
exactly
the clarity is. And start from that point. If you're dissonant, it's not going to, you're right, Bill, it's going to be an exercise in frustration and futility, not only in your work, but with those around you. You're going to feel dissonant always. Sweet. And, Bill, some more great advice I want to ask of you. Your opinion about what are the good things a writer can tell themselves to motivate, to keep them writing? And then, you know, on the other side of the coin, what are the bad things we do tell ourselves that can impede that? What short circuits that? What causes the dissonance?
Well, let's start with what you can do to not have dissonance, to keep your work, to keep you connected to your work and sustain your work. I believe that a writer's job is only, you should really only ever be asking two questions. And the way I always phrase it is this: what do I want to say, and have I said it? Right? So first you say to yourself, what do I want to say? And this is your invitation for the idea to come. And then once the idea comes, you translate it. And the only question you ask then is, have I said it? Is this on the page accurate to what I see in me? Nowhere is there a discussion of, is it any good? That is a measurement that does not belong within writing. We use that word all the time. The only word you should ask yourself is, have I said it? Is this accurate? And if it is, your work is done. If you can only ever ask yourself those two questions, because you always have the answer to those two questions, you can work effortlessly. I'm not saying it will come fast. It might come slow, but there need not be effort. Effort, for me, is when I am working against an unnecessary resistance. And so, what do I want to say? Have I said it? What do I want to say? Have I said it? Those are the only two questions necessary. Not will it sell? This is the beginning of the dissonance. Not will my mom like it? That's more dissonance. What do I want to say, and have I said it? The dissonance comes from really any other thought, any other judgment outside of those two questions. And so if you are trying to write, it's the two competing ideas, the number four from that last essay I just read. If you find yourself thinking about the publishing world, and if you find yourself thinking about whether a piece you've just written will succeed, or you find yourself thinking about who will like it, you have entered into a kind of nightmare of the unknown, because the other people, agents and editors and readers and publishers, aren't present. And so you can't ever know the answer to the question, I wonder if so-and-so will like it. You won't know until they read it. All you do know is what you would like most like to say, and have you said it. Anything else is dissonance.
I guess we can call that you now entered the dissonance zone.
Entered the dissonance zone. And you know it, because your mind is going into the world of other people's business. The thing about writing is, you get to choose what you love to tell, and you get to tell it, but you do not get to choose who else likes it, because you are not willing to be told what you have to like. And so you know that you cannot make anyone else like it, even the people you love. I mean, I can't guarantee that Jen's going to like everything I write, and sometimes she doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
I don't write it for her. I write it first for myself, and then for those people who it's meant to reach. And so you don't get to pick who will like it and the publisher that will take it. You don't get to pick that. The universe, you know, picks that. Other people make up their own minds.
And goes what you said so well, Bill, and I want to just keep repeating this, and this should be above the blackboard in schools. What do I want to say? And you know how I phrase it in my own way is, what would you most want to write, what you would most want to read? That's my take on it, but I think we're saying the same thing.
Yeah, that fact, I just posted a little video on Facebook, of all places, because I have a page called Write Within Yourself. You can go like it if you like, where we post inspirational quotes and where I post video questions that you can answer. And I ask people to give their best advice. And my best advice is, write the book you would most want to read. And that's what Write Within Yourself is. If I wanted to read a book, you know, I never wanted, Jeff, a how-to-write book. And I have nothing against how-to-write books. You know, books on, you know, how to write a good sentence, how to write a good story, how to write a good poem.
Got to have grammar.
It can be very useful. It can be very useful. But I never was interested in those. I always knew I would teach myself to write. But I always wanted a why-to-write book. Why am I doing this? I know it sounds like a strange question, but I would wake up confused. I could feel lost. I could feel disconnected from the meaning of it. I can become lost in all the people's opinions who I think I need in order for my work to be successful. And so I wanted a book that could ground me in why I write, ground me in the source of my actual love of writing and of all my most powerful work. And that's what I try to do with write within yourself is create essays that would guide people back to what it feels like to know their creative power and know their creative source. Because you know it. You know it. You have it. It's within you. You don't need to look anywhere for it. It's boiling in you right now, but you can forget. Life is about forgetting and remembering and forgetting and remembering. And if I can remind someone a little bit, then I've done my job. Because I need reminding all the time, constantly. I remind myself. Sometimes you remind me, Jeff, and sometimes my wife reminds me. Sometimes novelists remind me. Sometimes my children remind me. We do it for each other all the time. And so that's what this book is. It's a reminder.
And it is a wonderful book, Bill, I'll tell you.
Thank you.
A treasure, it really is. And I love the subtitle of An Author's Companion. It truly is.
Yeah.
I would even expand on it and say it is an artist's companion, a creator's companion.
Yeah.
All of the above. It's a life's companion, to be frank.
Perfect. That's what I want it to be. Because I really believe it. If you're trying to create a life you want to lead, you want to live your most authentic life, and writing taught me how to do that. And having a relationship with Jen helped teach me how to write. And so they keep feeding each other. And when I write the essays, Jeff, they connect. They help me remember why I'm doing this. You know, I write myself to a place I want to be. And usually when I've really done that, and when I come away from the desk, I often leave the desk feeling better than I did when I sat down at it. And if I can really, I know that I will probably be able to reach someone else and that'll be of use to someone else.
Well,
and it's all good for me. It's all gravy because I already feel better.
You've reached my friend on many occasions, and many other people that would be mutual friends and people you don't even know have come to me and said, what wonderful work. The Deferred Journal, which I'm honored to now be the associate editor for that great publication, you know, we got the joy of publishing one of your essays, so please visit us there at the Deferred Journal and read that essay from Bill. It's wonderful.
And speaking of that, we have another mutual friend.
We mentioned at the beginning of the show, Melissa here. Melissa, I'd love if you can come on and just say hi to Bill. It's so nice to have the three of you, have us all together. It's a rare experience and a rare time we have. We can set aside our busy lives and be able to meet together in one place at the same time.
It's great.
Hi, Melissa. I am. Can you all hear me?
Yes.
Oh, I can.
Oh, great, great. It's been a wonderful interview, Bill. I just have gotten so much wisdom from you tonight. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. It's great to hear your voice. And I know that we're going to be chatting again here on Tiferet Talks in about a month or 2 weeks, maybe. I can't remember.
Oh, 2 weeks, Bill. That was me twiddling my mustache to bring that segue in. Well done.
Yes, 2 weeks. That's right.
Yeah, I think it's June 2nd, so I'm really looking forward to it. And I started reading the book last night, and I love it.
Good. I think it's June 10th.
Started on Tiferet Talk Radio in 2 weeks, and there'll be announcements all over Facebook and all over the planet. You must join those two. I will be there, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I'll be there ahead of time, a day in advance, to make sure I get a front row seat. It's going to be an amazing Melissa, thank you so much.
Oh, thank you.
Looking forward to it, Melissa.
I am too.
So, Rick, where can people find you? Please give us an idea.
All right, so here's where they can find me. If they want to just find little old Bill, they can go to williamkanauer.com. And williamkanauer.com has got links. It's got my interviews up there. It's got my blog talk, my author to author, which is my blog talk radio show. It's got all kinds of archives of the shows I've done there. It's got, you can buy my book there. You can check out the various lectures I give. You want me to come talk to your writing group or to your church, or I don't care. I'll talk to anyone. I really don't mind. And it's got my links to my blog. Really, all the world of Bill Kanauer is in there. Or you can go to authormagazine.org, which is where I write my daily column, and where all our videos are and all the great interviews and articles and book reviews. So it's authormagazine.org and williamkanauer.com.
And they can also, thank you, Bill, and they can also hear your wonderful interviews, because you do what we do as well. and very well at Author Magazine on Blog Talk Radio right here in this network. And
yes,
I just want to spell your name so people can get to your website.
Oh, yes. It's William, W, you know, as William would be spelled. Last name is Kenower.
Kenow.
Yeah, Kenower.
Well, Mr. Kenower, this has been absolutely a wonderful time. I'm tripping on the adjectives. I've been looking forward to this for a long time, and like your launch party, I believe, last night, this has even exceeded my expectations that I knew was going to be great. I cannot thank you enough. I always learn from you, my friend. I always come back wiser, more grounded, and with more conviction that I'm doing the right thing, I'm in the right direction, and I'm staying in the moment. So thank you for
that,
my
friend. Oh, it's my pleasure, Jeff. I love talking to you. You're doing a great service to writers. You keep doing it. It's an absolute good.
Thank you, my friend. I want to wish you well, and to Jennifer as well, and your boys. And
okay.
I look forward to speaking again.
Okay, Jeff.
Thank you, everyone, for joining us. Melissa, thank you so much. This is our Jeffries with the Right Step signing off. Wish you all a wonderful day. Write what you most would want to read. Stay in the moment and be creative. It's your life. You're in charge. Go forward.